Hiya, this is Into It. I'm Daniel Welsh. I'm here with Rachel McGraw and Ash Percival. And this week, we're discussing reality TV lessons, debating how much of a celebrity's personal life the public is really entitled to, and reflecting on some classic Glastonbury performers ahead of this year's festival. Before that, I want to talk about Katy Perry and her current Witness album campaign. So to promote her new release, she's given fans a sort of unprecedented look at her life and moved into this kind of Big Brother house for 72 hours, except the gag is she's actually just there by herself and occasionally has celebrity guests. So over the 72 hours, she did all this like mad stuff. She had like RuPaul come and play charades with her. She had James Corden round, all of these big people. But one thing that really caught people's attention was she discussed cultural appropriation, which is a hot button issue that she has constantly been associated with throughout her career, whether it's I Kissed a Girl, her Unconditionally performance where she was dressed as a geisha, or her This Is How We Do video, which was just a straight up mess. So in this interview, she said that she's listened to her critics and she's been educating herself along the way. And she's credited her friends for talking to her in a quiet space without what she described as clapbacks. So obviously, when you're discussing something like this, it's divisive. And this particular interview has been divisive for a number of reasons. People have said that she's actually just been repeating the same mistakes. She should have already educated herself. Other people are saying that she's made a valid point about mob mentality, and other people are pointing out that she should have been including black women if she was going to have a debate about black women. Let's talk about Katy Perry. So there's a lot going on here, as you can tell, but I just squeezed into the past 2 minutes. What do we think of her latest update?
I think it's quite interesting because of the kind of time that she's placed herself in. Like right at the start of this album campaign, she came out and said it was all going to be about purposeful pop, and it was going to be about education and politics, and it was going to be smarter and more different, and basically doing all of the things that Lemonade did.
Yeah.
But claiming she was the first one to do that. So I just think the problem is she's kind of really, in doing that, she's really put the spotlight on herself. And she really, I think we spoke about it on the podcast, but she came out and made such a point of saying, I'm going to do these things and I'm going to be smart about it, that obviously she's kind of under extra scrutiny, I think.
Yeah, so way back in February, she came out and said that her new album was going to be purposeful pop. Those were her words. New single, Change the Rhythm, had a sort of political message. I think calling it a political message might be over-egging it, but it was kind of political.
I'm still trying to find the message in it 2 months
ago. I mean, that's it. I feel like if you have to look that deeply, I mean, you can find a political message in anything if you look hard enough. Some people have got degrees in it, but the point is, we talked about it on the podcast back in February. We said we'd wait and see whether or not she followed through on it. And, well, do you think that she has? The album's out this week. Do you think that she's managed to deliver that purposeful pop that she was talking about?
In short, no. It's a great album, but it's not a purposeful pop album. I've listened to the album a lot over the past week. I think it's really good. But I think she really sort of set herself up for failure and sort of extra scrutiny when she sort of came out with that message. And actually, like, I worry for her at the moment, because I do think there is kind of this, the tide has turned against her, I think, in some respects. And I think people are out to get her, which kind of ties in with this like whole mob mentality thing that you mentioned earlier. I do feel that there is that attitude towards her at the moment of wanting to trip her up, wanting to find like faults in what she does. And of course, as any pop star is, they're not perfect. They, you know, they do make mistakes. They do have to learn and grow and whatever. And at least she's acknowledging like past mistakes is how I feel about it personally.
Yeah, I agree with the acknowledging of the past mistakes. And, you know, it's great to have somebody hold their hands up and go, that was wrong, that was an error, rather than continuing to defend it as somebody like Lily Allen has done in the past. She's never really cottoned on to certain things, in my opinion. But in the same breath, we had like last month she was on SNL with what are those rappers called, Migos, performing Bon Appetit, and that was a whole new cultural appropriation thing. She was accused of appropriating black culture once again, and so she's saying she's learning, but also is she actually learning?
It's hard because I think just going like back to what Ash said about this like mob mentality, I do think Katy Perry is one of the people in the spotlight, and definitely one of the women in the spotlight who is perhaps subject to more scrutiny than a lot of others. But then the problem is where she kind of set her stall out and said she was going to do that, she's almost encouraged those levels of, you know, in a way she's encouraging people. You know, she said, I'm going to aim for this, this and this, so people are going to measure her against it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like if she said, oh, there's a duet with Lady Gaga on my new album, and then the album came out and there was no Lady Gaga duet, you would go, yeah. Well, hang on a minute. You said there was a duet with Lady Gaga. And that's the it's the same thing. She said, I'm going to do purposeful pop. It's not unacceptable that people would be waiting for that to come along. And she didn't have to do that. Lana Del Rey's out at the minute. And she's specifically said, these are troublesome times, so I'm going to do an album that's pure escapism and pure fantasy, which is what Katy Perry's been doing for the last 10 years. So I don't understand why she didn't just do that, why she didn't just do this surreal, fabulous California Dreams experience.
Well, the album isn't like a departure from like previous stuff. The album does sound very different to like her previous album. So whether she's kind of like misinterpreted her own kind of message that she's been trying to portray, that might be it. It's not purposeful pop, but it is very different from the kind of the California Girls bubblegum pop Katy Perry that we've seen in the past. Whether she's just mixed her messages up.
The thing is, she's grown up so much as well. Like, Katy Perry now isn't the same Katy Perry that, like, burst onto the scene. You know, like, even in recent years, we've seen her, like, getting involved with the Hillary Clinton campaign, and she's been through so many different things. Like, I get the decision for this message, but I also kind of question as well, I don't know anything about this, but with messages like that, how much of it is Katy Perry going into the studio and saying, I want to do this, and how much of it is the label saying, right, we need an angle, how are we going to go about this?
Yeah, and to be fair, she could have set a purposeful pop album out, and the label could have turned around and said, no, we need something more commercial.
It's true, but also she's been, you know, Rachel, you just mentioned the Hillary Clinton campaign. She was so big on that, and she got so much praise for being so vocal. And in fairness to Katy Perry, I feel like she's one of the only people who is maintaining that even now.
Yeah.
You know, so many people were against Trump in the lead up to the election. And it feels like now those same pop stars are now sort of fading back a little bit. Like, I mean, not to like point fingers and name names, because that's what you've literally just been saying, Ash, but mob mentality. But somebody like Miley Cyrus, she was so, so vocal in favor of Hillary Clinton and the Democrats in general. Trump's got in, and then suddenly her new album, I've grown my hair out and I've lost all of my costumes. Please like me again, America. You know what I mean? It's that sort of thing where it's like,
yeah.
So fair play to Katy Perry for sticking to her guns. But I want to talk about that mob mentality thing as well, because that is bad. And I think it is, you're right in that there are patterns with pop stars, and like we see the same things over and over where people are really celebrated and they're really built up. And then they show there's a crack forms. And rather than going, well, these people are human, blah, 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 it's like, right, well, let's see if we can wedge that a bit more and let's look for more cracks and then let's totally pick it apart. And then let's build it back up again.
I think one thing as well that was really sad to see from that stream that she did was she sat down and did like a therapy session.
Yeah.
And she kind of admitted the kind of pressure she feels to be Katy Perry. That's her stage name. That's her persona. That's not who she is. And she kind of talked about this pressure that she faces sort of daily to put on this show. And it was really sad. She broke down like quite heavily, and it kind of made me question like, God, like, is everything okay? Like, there's a lot of pressure on her at the moment and a lot of scrutiny. And when you're kind of like reading these stories and you're reading about the Taylor Swift feud and you're reading about the cultural appropriation accusations, you don't actually always think of the person that's behind that. And I think that's a lot of this mob mentality. They're not thinking about the effect it could be having on her mental health.
That is true as well. Agreed.
We're just like, that was really good.
I mean, that therapy session was very, it was very tough to watch. And it was very emotionally honest from somebody who is essentially a cartoon character and has been for the past 10 years. To see her be so earnest and so sincere, it was like...
Even just the decision to do that is...
You don't get many A-list stars, like, openly doing that. I mean, you get Colleen Nolan going on Channel 5 in therapy series, but you don't get your Katy Perry.
What's the timing
Beyonce
on that, Colleen? No, you are right there.
But you don't get like sort of big stars opening up in such a kind of candid way like that.
What do we think Katy Perry should do next?
I don't know. I just hope that whatever she does is what she actually wants to do.
I hope she just lets the music speak for itself. Is what I would like to see her do. And I know that some of the tracks that she's released have been a bit hit and miss. Like, Bon Appetit hasn't done very well. There's obviously been all the conversation about Taylor Swift around Swish Swish. But I think she needs to come back with some good visuals, come back with a great song, and just unleash that on the world and kind of do it without all the dialogue around it.
Yeah, but again, it's like she introduced that dialogue herself, so you think maybe next time.
Yeah. Lesson to be learnt from this, Katie. Just don't set yourself up. Don't set, as Rachel, to borrow Rachel's phrase, don't set your stall out.
Yeah. All right, well, nice point to end on. Witness is out now. Have a listen. Ash likes it. So there we are. Yeah. Let's talk about Love Island, everybody.
Yay!
So this week, there was, I don't want to say it was a surprising discussion, but it was quite a surprising discussion about feminism, right?
Yeah.
So in case you didn't see it, one contestant, Camilla, not to be confused with Camilla Parker Bowles.
No, that would be something I would watch.
She was on a date with this man who she's been partnered with, and he very blasé asked if she was a feminist, and she was like, well, yes, of course I am. And he was quite taken aback, and he ended up saying that he thinks that feminists don't want equality. Their version of equality is tilted towards women, that there are enough female MPs, and that women had the same opportunities as men, maybe even more opportunities. So this lass, Camilla is her name, and she is a feminist. She was quite upset by this because she'd just spent the night with him the night before.
They didn't have sex.
Okay.
Just to...
To be fair, that is, on what level did she spend the night with
him? Well, she spent the night in his bed. Well, actually...
They have to. If they're in a couple, they have to sleep in the same bed.
So she was very upset. She was... I mean... There we are. That's the whole program. She was very upset. She was saying she felt like she'd done feminism a disservice by getting with this guy and all of this. Meanwhile, on Big Brother, there's a whole conversation going on about race right now. Ofcom have received 9 complaints after one of the white contestants, Rebecca Jane, called her fellow housemate, Deborah Agbula, aggressive, saying, Deborah said that if she'd been white, then Rebecca would never have used the word aggressive. So with all of these big discussions going on reality TV right now, are there societal lessons that we can learn from shows like Big Brother and Love Island, or should we be leaving the heavier topics to more weighty genres?
So I'm a massive reality TV fan, and I always have been. Mm-hmm. And shows like Big Brother in particular, actually, has always shone a light on society issues. You know, you only have to look at the Jade Goodie Shilpa Shetty thing, which was massively controversial at the time, but shone a light on a topic that people really didn't know much about at the time. So I think it's not surprising that we're seeing this. And I know, Rachel, you were very surprised that there was a conversation about feminism on Love Island.
It is the first story I read about Love Island. Like, Ash has been telling me to watch it for like a week and a half, and I've refused. And then this feminism email came through, and I was hooked.
Which I think is great. I think that's the power of a show like this. Like, people can be a bit sniffy about reality TV, especially like when it's sort of young, hot things that people automatically assume don't have brain cells. And it's like, actually, no, these people have got a conversation.
One of them.
Well, certainly one of them in a conversation.
Camilla, what's her job? She's like...
She's a bomb disposal expert, essentially.
Oh my God.
So she's a smart, intelligent
woman.
She's
super impressive.
This is amazing.
Also, she had a kiss with Prince Harry. Allegedly.
I want to be best friends with Camilla.
She's amazing. Like, honestly, she's brilliant. But no, I think it's really important that these shows are showing it. However, it was quite funny to then watch Love Island the day after this feminism row happened, when they had a booty battle of the booty competition.
It was billed as a twerk off.
And yeah.
One step forward, 10 steps back. I think it's interesting, though, because we've spoke about this on the podcast quite a lot, about how soaps have the power to kind of have these storylines. In Coronation Street, we've had the teenage grooming storyline. In EastEnders, we had male depression over Christmas. And we kind of praise them all the time for, you know, showcasing things at tea time that families might not be talking about, and for putting those issues at the front. And I think that Love Island and Big Brother, you know, potentially deserve the same sort of praise. I don't really know where it would go, because it's not the same as a soap where you have this storylining team who are in charge.
But well, you do sometimes.
Well, yeah. But the fact that this conversation about feminism and this row has taken place on Love Island and resulted in a bit of a breakup. Yeah, Did they split? Amazing.
But you think of how many 16 to 20-year-olds watch Love Island. They don't get taught about feminism in school. They're now probably going to school, going out with their friends and having a conversation about feminism.
I just hope that conversation, because my worry is that the only thing I think with this is, when it's a soap, there's a storyliner who's in charge of making sure it's all dealt with totally responsibly. My problem with something like this, I'm really glad it's happening, but how many guys at home, or even girls, will have listened to what Johnny was saying, the guy, and gone, well, yeah, there are enough female MPs, yeah. And my worry is that there's no proper counter to that.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? So it was left to Camilla to state the claim, no, there aren't enough female MPs, no, there aren't enough opportunities for women, no, there aren't enough women in high-paying, important jobs. And so it was a good job she was there to have that discussion because, as you've just said, there's no script.
It should flash up on the bottom. Literally, as
who won the argument?
As he says, there are enough female MPs. Like, a bar should come up saying, like, how many female MPs there are.
Well, that, I mean, as I say, so Camilla was there to back up the claim and she had the statistics and she's a smart lass. She knew what she was talking about. On Big Brother, there's been a few instances like this with racism discussions and homophobia and all these sorts of important topics on Big Brother, there often is no resolution because they haven't done anything explicitly bad. They haven't used a racial slur. They haven't specifically cordoned anyone off for an explicit reason. And so it's hard to actually police and it's hard to govern. And that's where I wish Big Brother would go a little bit further. And I wish that you would see the housemates take the victim in the situation's side a bit more. Because as you say, Rachel, there is nobody to step in and, you know, make sure it goes a certain way.
Well, just not even to make sure it goes a certain way, but just to make sure that the facts are quite clear.
Yeah. Oh, but, I mean, you know, people are learning, but also if the wrong thing happens, then they learn the wrong thing, right? Like, that's because it's real. And so whatever they're watching, if it goes one way, that's what they say. And if it goes another way, that's what they say. And so last week, Sukhvinder, who is a Sikh housemate in Big Brother, she got in two different rows in 2 days. And obviously in a row, there's nobody right and nobody wrong. I would argue that she was right in both of those rows and ended up being portrayed as being in the wrong both times. And so one of the other housemates took her aside and was like, I know why you're frustrated. And she was like, yeah, so do I. And that was the end of the conversation. And I was watching at home and I was like, oh, please say why. Please say that it's race involved. You know, like, don't hint at it. Come on, really, really say it and really bring it home. But then, again, it's real, so you can't make people say certain things.
I guess also, like, they're afraid of, like, people then just going, like, oh, well, you're playing the race card, because...
Which is the other thing with reality TV, is that if you cry sexism and you cry racism and you cry homophobia, sometimes that can backfire. Unless you've got receipts for days, people quite often don't want to hear it because it's a reflection of their own behaviour a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Which is the danger.
But I think it's really good that shows like this do shine a light, sometimes unexpectedly, like in the case of Love Island and feminism, like they shine a light unexpectedly on these issues that you don't think would come on these shows. What I would say in terms of like reality TV is both of those shows are kind of not social experiments, because we know that Big Brother's kind of moved past that, and certainly Love Island isn't setting out itself to be a sort of experiment between 12 people seeing if they will shag or not. But I think that in that sort of circumstance where they're all living together and they're all kind of like, it's not scripted in the same way like Towie or Geordie Shaw might be, there's always going to be real issues that arise between these people.
Yeah, as long as you've got a big community of people, essentially, exactly. There's always going to be divides.
However, maybe there could be conversations about how we could represent better parts of those communities on those shows. I think Big Brother's actually done an all right job of casting a diverse mix of people this year.
I would agree with that. You know what? It could be more diverse. Of course it could, but there's always room for improvement.
But admittedly, Love Island has got no defence, really.
Well, the good thing is about Love Island, at least, that there's constantly people coming and going. Like, Love Island's got a revolving door situation where there's always a new person coming every couple of days. So, you know, if you were to look at the Love Island cast and go, that is a group of almost exclusively white people, then they can go, oh, yeah, you're right, and throw some more people
as
in.
As long as you're heterosexual and a size 8 to 10, you can be on Love Island.
Well, that is a separate discussion that there literally isn't enough time in the world for me to go into. So let's move on to topic number 3 for today, which is Meghan Markle from Suits. So she was at a press event for Suits this week, and she made headlines by saying absolutely nothing, which is impressive in itself. So she was asked...
You stretched 250 words out of it.
Too right, I did. Journalism. So she was asked about her relationship with Prince Harry. She was answering questions about the TV show that she stars in, Suits. So she was reportedly asked by one journalist whether she hoped that she would marry her boyfriend, Prince Harry. So she's actually yet to comment on this relationship publicly, and apparently she just offered a polite smile by way of response. But I want to talk a bit more generally about celebrities and their personal lives. So is there any sort of argument that in a situation like this, if you're going to put yourself in the public eye, you owe the public something of your personal life? Is there any argument to say that, do we think?
I've always had kind of the same view on it. Obviously, we work on an entertainment and celebrity desk. We write about celebrities quite a lot. It includes things like breakups, comments, et cetera, et cetera. And my kind of view on it has always been, if you put those aspects of your personal life out there, you should always expect an interest in them. So in the case of someone like Katie Price, who has had numerous reality TV shows all featuring her children, she takes her kids to events, she goes on Loose Women and talks about them.
I mean, beyond that, she's in OK magazine every other week talking about her children, so talking about her marriage.
If she was promoting a TV show she was on and she got a question about whether she was going to marry someone, totally fine. In the case of Meghan Markle, she's never spoken about Prince Harry. Nope. She hasn't been to any public events or on any red carpets with him. So I do think that I don't think you have any grounds to expect her to comment on her personal life.
Particularly in that sort of environment. I mean, if she was at, I don't know, if she was at, what would she even be at? If she was at some sort of Prince's Trust event, as Prince Harry's date.
Yeah.
For the evening, and somebody said, do you think you're going to get married? I would still say it was a bit dubious, but I would understand where the question came from. I would understand why, with him stood there at an event for him, that she was literally only there for because of him, someone would ask her about whether she's going to get married. For something like Suits, where she's an actress, she was at work, to suddenly have Prince Harry ask, that's where I think, well, hang on, this hasn't actually got anything to do with this.
I think with her, it's quite a unique circumstance, because I think the element of royalty just brings a whole new level to the interest. And, you know, like, there is public interest and, like, it's of interest to the public and it's public interest, like the activities of the royal family. So, yes, I know that their romance is their private life, but equally that they're such like high up figures in this country that everyone in this country knows. There is always, always, always going to be a level of interest in who's dating who. Look at the hysteria around royal weddings and royal babies and... You know, so when Harry is in a serious relationship with someone, people are going to want to know the details. And I kind of don't blame them for that, really. I agree that it's not the right circumstance to raise it in when she's at work, if you want to use that phrase. But I think she should be expecting questions on the fact that she's dating one of the highest members of the royal family.
I think she probably does, but I just think it's where it's kind of the job of the press and it's the job of journalists to know... Yes, the public interest is there, and your job as a journalist is to decide kind of where the line is. Because didn't she, when she started dating him, weren't Kensington Palace forced to put out a statement or something?
Well, because
her
mother had been...
So that is obviously way further across the line. But it's the job of the journalist sat at this press conference for Suits to decide, is this appropriate, is this not appropriate? And I do think they made the wrong decision.
I mean, I definitely think that was inappropriate, because... The thing is, as well, I mean, this is, as Ash said, it's a very specific situation because she is an actress and he is a prince. And so she is there on her own back. She's there promoting something that she's done, that she stars in all the time. And so to ask her about her relationship and her private life, it's basically making her Prince Harry's girlfriend rather than, even though they're there to discuss a TV show that she's been a part of for however many years before she even met him.
What a load of promotion for Suits,
though. I mean, you can't argue with those viewing figures. Though,
I mean, I bet the PR is just sat there like, yep, keep asking these questions, guys.
Do you think, so Rachel, you mentioned people like Katie Price coming out and laying all that personal life out for us all to feast on.
Spread like a buffet in the words of Katy Perry.
Going back to Katy Perry and Bon Appetit, is there ever a point where if, you know, they're willing to change their minds and go, actually, I want to put all of this back in my suitcase and hide it all away from everybody... What happens then?
I think
if
they're going through something quite unique, if they're going through, I don't know, like off the top of my head, like some, you know, like a bereavement or like serious personal issues, then they still have a right to privacy. But I think when you make your kids part of your brand in that way, anything kind of going forward that involves that personal brand side of you, I think your family and your personal life is kind of fair game.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Beckhams. Like, could you imagine the Beckhams putting their kids back in the cupboard and like?
But the thing is, with the Beckhams though, they're different to Katie Price because they don't tell you.
Yeah, they're
everything.
Still mysterious. Yeah.
I mean, literally,
they?
I know when Katie Price's kids got a toothache. I know when the kids off. You know what I mean? I know everything because if you follow her on Instagram.
Yeah.
I mean, the Beckhams share pictures of their kids. Their kids go to events, and you had like Romeo releasing that single, and Brooklyn doing whatever it is that he does to keep his name in the papers. But you don't actually know that much about them compared to somebody like Katie Price.
I think, like, to use Stephanie Davis and Jeremy McConnell as an example, everything about their life is on Twitter. It's sold stories to magazines. It's set up pap shots to newspapers.
Allegedly.
Every aspect of their relationship has been sold or put out for public consumption. What I would then have a problem with is if they then decide to go, we need our privacy. We don't want, no intrusion. No, up until this point, you have set everything out like a buffet.
But is that not their right, though, to change their mind and go, actually, I don't...
The thing that does it for me, though, is when they change their mind and then they actually change it back again.
Yeah, and they dip their toe across the line each time.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, obviously, you know, an individual gets to call the shots about their personal life, but... If you're using it to kind of sell things and you put yourself out there, kind of a situation I sort of think of is, we obviously do interviews all the time. And it's, if you were interviewing someone, like say you were interviewing Stephanie Davis, and obviously we would...
Fingers crossed.
No, thanks.
You can do that one, Daniel.
That's
the difference between us. I'm like fighting to the front of the queue to get to Stephanie Davis.
Like hypothetically, if we were going to interview her, you would be like, okay, what do people care about? They care about her relationship. They care about her kid, this, that, and the other. If you then got an email from her people the week before saying, oh, by the way, you can't ask about her personal life, that wouldn't be fair.
You
can't exactly ask about our work prospects, can you?
Yeah.
Bless you, Stephanie. If you're listening, tweet me.
I think that's kind of, I don't know, that's a bit of a barometer, I think.
Well, she's like, the thing with someone like her is, yes, she was an actress in Hollyoaks, questionable actress in Hollyoaks.
Oh, she was good
she
in Hollyoaks.
She was good.
Mm. I mean, past tense was good, which is true.
But now she literally is famous for her personal life.
Yes, she is famous
for nothing else. So when you are famous for that reason, when that is your claim to fame, I kind of don't think you have a defence.
We have no other questions to ask you. How was Hollyoaks 10 years ago?
I mean, I would ask her about Over the Rainbow, but that's just me. That's what I want the real tea on.
Because you like that performance of her Let's Get Loud.
Too right, I do. I'm going to listen to it once we wrap up. Shall we quickly chat about Glastonbury?
Yeah, go on.
So, Jeremy Corbyn, right before we went to record this, Jeremy Corbyn was announced to be on the lineup for this year's Glastonbury Festival. Rachel, can you quickly tell us what he's doing? Because you're the Glastonbury expert.
He's doing two things. He's going to be on the left field doing a talk at 12 p.m. on Saturday, I believe, with Clive Lewis, Labour MP.
Rachel, you don't want to flood this information. Oh, no, I've got you all want access.
And then he's going to introduce Run the Jewels on the Pyramid Stage.
So inspired by Jeremy Corbyn at Glastonbury, it got me thinking about people who have and haven't made appearances at the festival over the years. And so this week's quiz is called Glastonbury or Nastonbury? So I'm going to give you each two people, and you have to tell me which of them has played Glastonbury and which of them...
Can we just say not play Glastonbury?
Yeah, I'll not make that pun again. So Rachel, as festival queen, I'm going to come to you first.
Okay.
So the two people are Rod Stewart and Phil Collins. Who has played Glastonbury? Who's Glastonbury and who's Nastonbury?
Sounds like they're nasty. It just sounds like you're saying nasty from the West Country.
I don't know the answer to this, so I'm going to have to just guess it. Ooh. I'm going to guess that Phil Collins has.
I'm afraid you're incorrect. Hot Rod headlined in 2002.
Oh my God.
He told the crowd, I wasn't sure whether to play Do You Think I'm Sexy, as it's not very cool, but it's part of my legacy, so bugger it.
And that's why
Amen
we love Hot
that.
Rod.
That's one of many reasons I love Hot Rod. Ash, I'm coming to you next. Queen and status quo. Glastonbury or Nastonbury?
Oh.
File that under puns that work written down, but not spoken out loud.
Again, I don't know this, so I'm just going to have to guess. I'm going to say the Queen haven't and status quo have.
That is correct. Brian May said that he'll never play Glastonbury. Well, he won't play it in the future because organiser Michael Evers supports the so-called Badger Cull. So there you have it.
Brian May, Badger fan, who knew?
Brian May loves badgers.
Far be it from me to suggest he's got a badger on his head.
Oh, girl. All right, Ash, you're winning both the shade race and the Glastonbury quiz. Rachel, Rolling Stones tribute band No Moss and ABBA tribute band Bjorn Again. One of them has played Glastonbury and one of them has not.
What was the first one?
The Rolling Stones tribute band No Moss.
Because this year there's a Smiths tribute band.
Is there?
Yeah.
This is the Glastonbury that I should have been at.
I know, you said this earlier and it just it's more and more getting correct. But I don't know the answer to this. I'm going to guess the Rolling Stones tribute band have.
I'm afraid you're incorrect once again. In fact, No Moss don't actually exist. I just made them up. But how good a name would No Moss be for a Rolling Stones tribute band?
Would it?
Because a Rolling Stone gathers no moss.
That's tenuously.
Fooled you!
You've made Glastonbury look good.
All right, well, no points for you. Ash, Bruce Forsyth and Stella Black. One of them's played Glastonbury, one of them
I know
not.
The answer to this I because I was there the year he did. Yeah.
Did you get in there? Because the field was too
I
busy.
Didn't.
We couldn't, yeah, they were like, you can't get in.
But Bruce Forsyth did, Stella Black has not.
Yes, that is correct. He did the legend slot in 2013, got 5 stars in the
it
Guardian.
It wasn't the legend slot that he did.
Was it not?
No, he was in the Avalon field.
Oh. Yeah. Wasn't the legend slot at all. He got 5 stars in the Guardian anyway. Well, yeah.
What did he get up and do in the legend slot, I wonder? What would Brucey do?
Who knows?
All right, well, Ash, you're up 2 points. Rachel, this is to get back in the game.
Oh, God.
Lady Gaga or Grace Jones?
I don't actually know the answer to this, but Ash definitely knows
I do,
it.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess Grace Jones has.
I'm afraid wrong? Grace Jones has said that she would only play Glastonbury if they could afford her. Whereas Lady Gaga performed in
2009, I think.
It was fab. I mean, I was watching from home, obviously, because of all of the mud. I don't like it. But it was a good set, wasn't it?
Played the other stage, yeah. It was the year she was sort of promoting the fame.
Yeah, but weirdly hasn't played since. No. All right, well, Ash, you've actually won the quiz.
I'm so
what
sad.
A shock twist!
It's like a Glastonbury quiz.
So, Rachel, you enjoy Glastonbury next week.
Maybe I might actually see some bands now.
You might see No Moss there.
It would just be Daniel in a one-man band.
Doing I Can't Get No Satisfaction on the electric keyboard.
Oh,
all right, well, while I'm off to listen to the hits of No Moss on Spotify, we'll be back next week. Don't forget to subscribe on the iTunes store. Laters!